Back to the spirit of discernment. I'm sure we'll figure it out. So oftentimes when we have issues, I think it really chalks up to one of three issues, right? Either discernment, right? We don't know what it is, what's going on, what's happening. We're kind of blind to it. Two, the wisdom of what to do, even if once we figure it out, it's like, what the hell do we even do with this? Or thirdly, sometimes it's just timing, right? We're like, you know what it is, you know what to do with it, but you know it's just not the time, right? Which maybe that can be the toughest part, to just kind of sit on the sidelines and figure things out. But I think discernment is such, it is the critical beginning part of that. I think we spend so much time just kind of blind to things. At my house, we've been having some plumbing issues where it just sucks to use the washer. Every time, like, the washer will back up and water will overflow. And one day, I was doing a load of laundry, and I went upstairs to wash the dishes, and I had my headphones in, and I couldn't hear the water overflowing, right? And it was just going and just going. And then I went downstairs, and there was, like, water everywhere. And I'm like, what an allegory of how often I'm not paying attention to something that's clearly happening somewhere, but I've got my headphones on and I'm thinking of something else. I'm somewhere else, right? And I think so often our approach to discernment is the exact same way. Like, other things are louder and we're paying attention to them and we have no sensitivity to the things that are kind of popping off around us. And then when we finally figure out what it is, we're like, oh my gosh, God, why would you do this? You know, like, okay. You know, I mean, we end up landing there. And so I think, it's why I think discernment is such a critical part of our spiritual makeup and our development. I know some people would use the word intuition, whatever you want to call it, but it's the ultimate ability to kind of separate things and be able to divide it. I would define the gift of discernment as being one of the critical states of making the church one, right? Like, of being able to acknowledge differences and similarities, of being able to, you know, acknowledge what's of God, what isn't of God. The idea of discernment is the ability to recognize, identify, and distinguish between spirits and circumstances and people, right? Is a good time to take notes on your iPhones? So the ability to recognize, identify, and distinguish so that you recognize something's there, right? That you are able to identify that correctly, and that you're able to distinguish between what's going on, right? As an example, right, this is super important, being able to tell the difference between someone being nice to you or flirting with you. It's a pretty big difference, right? And how stupid do you feel when you're wrong, right? Like, ugh, you know? And then once you're able to recognize what's happening and you're able to identify to distinguish as to what to do with it, right? And I use it as sort of like a simple way, right? Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I use that one because I think we can all relate to kind of wondering what's happening. You're like, are they just being nice? Like, I'm just going to take it as that, you know? And then when you find out someone, like, you're like, oh, you know, and the signs are there, right? So I think it's like, oh, it's the guy from the beginning of the movie. if I had only known. Discernment. So the purpose behind discernment, like its expressed purpose, the idea for why it exists, because I think it's so easy for us to talk about a gift and then not realize what place it has in our lives. And while it can seem very self-evident, I think it plays four critical roles. It lifts the veil that covers an unseen spiritual world, right? That's sort of the spooky part of it, right? Where people kind of get tripped up and kind of sensationist about it because it's like, oh, the spiritual, right? It becomes sort of more ambiguous. It enables us to see how God is seeing, right? Which sometimes is the more kind of applicable version of it. It protects us from deception when we notice something not being right, even though, like, when you're looking at it, it's like, there's nothing wrong with it, but that makes me uneasy. Something's up here. And enables us to diagnose a situation and help someone with it, which I think that last application is why most people are afraid when we talk about things like discerning of spirits or even the prophetic. It's like they're going to say something mean, right? Suddenly our defenses, our walls go up, right? When someone discerns something and wants to kind of talk to you about it, and you're like, I'm good, really? Like, I'm fine. I don't need another criticism. But in reality, it's probably based more on the misusage of it, right? Because when we're able to operate in those four areas, it develops a sort of more holistic approach to our faith. Because we rarely recognize, I think, And it's so scriptural, but we rarely recognize that it is the sense, right? It is the smell or the hearing that allows us to recognize what's happening beyond ourselves. And in the Bible, most often than not, it's one of these four things like triggering that people have to kind of use that sense. It's either the Spirit of God showing up, right? When you think of Joshua, he sees a man dressed in armor, and Joshua suddenly starts bowing up, you know? And it's like, oh, it's God, my bad. You know, like suddenly like that realization is like, oh, this would have ended poorly for me. You know, it's in those environments, right? An angel, you guys remember Balaam and the donkey, the most common application of that. He's beating the donkey because he thinks that's the problem. But in reality, there's something else going on, right? And I think, again, sometimes I often wonder how many of us would have experienced an angelic activity or demonic activity if we were aware of it. Right? Or we misdiagnose it, right? One thing I often hear is when people talk about like demonic attacks, it's the enemy attacking me. And I was like, man, I wish you were discerning enough to know those are just bad choices you're making, right? Like those are the examples of that. And it doesn't make one thing not true, right? It just may not be applicable to that circumstance. And I think that often leads to desensitizing us. And the Bible often talks about like the spirit of man, right? And that's all often related to the idea of like, when something your effort and when is something God's effort, right? Being able to distinguish like, I think I'm doing this out of my own energy and this has nothing to do with God and I'm attributing it to him and I'm getting myself in a world of trouble. Like, so being able to kind of look through those things and identify those things, and we'll use some examples, is really critical, I think, to our development. It would be awesome if it's where we start as Christians, right? We probably wouldn't get involved or wrapped up in a lot of like crap in the beginning of it, right? If we were able to kind of really be sensitive to those type of things and really develop those skills, because it's so funny because in the natural, it's exactly what we do with kids. We teach them to talk, we teach them to eat, we teach them to listen, we teach them to speak. And if there's something kind of missing in those areas, we're able to identify like, you know, my daughter, who's gone through speech therapy, like that was, we had to troubleshoot that whole situation. Is she speaking the way she's hearing words? Like, is that what's going on? Because we've had, you know, one of my nephews has an ear tube in his ear, and once he got it put in, suddenly his language changed. And he was literally mimicking the sounds he was hearing because there was an issue with his hearing and not his speech, right? So being able to kind of identify those things and needing those senses is critical. So, first one. To lift the veil that covers the unseen spiritual world. One of my favorite examples is in Acts 27, verse 23-25. Kind of summing up these set of verses, you see Paul is on this journey, a storm comes in. The storm is, he's giving advice to these people, they're not listening. The storm is turning the ship around and wreaking havoc. Everyone's scared. Everyone's fearful for their lives. And one night, it says, starting in verse 23, last night, this is Paul speaking to the people that he's with. Acts 27, verse 23-25. Paul says, last night, an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. So they're in this really difficult circumstance. The storm is coming in. They're fearful and terrified, right? And they're beginning to question what's going on. And Paul has an angelic visitation and is able to have this experience. And then he's able to translate that experience to these group of people. Pretty simple enough, right? But it's difficult to do, it's difficult for us to understand like how critical that situation was. In almost every other circumstance in Scripture where they talk about a ship and a storm like that, it always like reaches this point of like people getting thrown overboard because they think it's someone else's fault on the ship. You see that with Jonah, right? Like you see it in Jonah. Like every time it's like something bad happens, it's like someone here did it and we need to hunt that person down, right? And this circumstance would easily have escalated to that, right? And Paul's going, I know it's scary, I know it's bad, but it has nothing to do with anyone having to turn on each other, and, you know, God has said he'll deliver us. And that changes, you know, the spirit of a word like that changes our attitude and the direction in which we look at something, right? And we forget, and it's easily, I think it's all too easy for us to desensitize ourselves to the spiritual world and what's happening around us. The same thing is true, I think, with the demonic. I remember being in a situation a few years ago, I'm sure you guys have heard the story, where it was myself, our previous pastor, and an elder, and we were ministering to a couple, and the other two guys were way more full of wisdom than I am, so I just kind of sit there and listened and just kind of observed the situation. And as the conversation's going, like, it's just getting worse and worse. I mean, it's just like a big loop of people kind of starting to get agitated and angry at each other, no one really listening. And I remember at a certain point, I had the thought, and once I had the thought, like, something in me jumped. I had the thought, this has nothing to do with the conversation, there's something demonic about this. I had no reason to think that way, feel that way. I had never necessarily experienced the demonic in some overt experience that I could, like, look at my past and go, I had this experience, therefore, I discern it to be this way. I just could tell, like, this isn't okay, right? So as soon as I recognized it was something demonic, I remember standing up. I think I had my hoodie on, so it probably looked far more dramatic than I intended. So I stood up, and I immediately started, like, just praying and saying something. And it must have happened almost like simultaneously or whatever, but as I did that, that person went into full-blown manifestation, like contorting, making weird noises, da, da. And I remember, like, I don't know what I'm doing, but keep going. Like, you know, like, once it happened, we're just like, we're just going to keep doing Avenger stuff. Like, I don't know, like, keep shooting at it, and it'll go, right? Like, no plan. And I remember the pastor and the elder that was with me just stared at me like, what are you doing? And then, like, stared at this person. We're like, whoa, like, backing up. As it all started happening, I'm going, wow, we could have just sat in that room and done the argument thing for the rest of the night. And through that circumstance and situation, this person was delivered. I mean, it was a complete restoration. And that was the first time I'd ever seen or experienced something like that. And I think those are the things that something we can discern and understand what's going on. Paul is very clear in Ephesians 4 when he talks about we don't war against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. It's a recognition that there is a spiritual atmosphere that affects the natural that we are so blind to that we don't acknowledge and recognize and often end up being victims of circumstances and situations we could have been proactive in. And I say that that's an example of sort of like the unseen realm or the unseen things. And I will say, like, while, again, personally, I've never had, like, many experiences in that in this particular area. I know good friends of mine that, like, I don't know if this is, like, their primary spiritual gifts that they operate in, but it's almost like, oh, yeah, I knew that before you told me because an angel told me in a dream last night. And you're like, oh, okay, well, then I'll just sit here and shut up. Like, you know, like, so they're like, oh, okay. But, you know, and I realize, like, how often, like, they have those angelic experiences, and it's like, go this way, go do this. Like, those type of environments that it's like, wow, how helpful must that be than me, who feels like I'm walking in the dark trying to find a light switch, and I'm stepping on a Lego and something wet, and I don't know what that is, and I'm starting to panic. Like, right? Like, in those situations, right? Who wants that? It enables us to see how God sees. An easy example is 1 Samuel 16, right? That's the one we've always heard of Samuel and the sons of Jesse and David being anointed as king, right? It's such a common story. Such a painful and sad story. It's like, surely it's this son. Surely it's this son. Surely it's this son. Nope. All right, well, I guess our job's here. God was wrong. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that ugly kid outside over there that no one talks to. You know, and it's just like this humpback kid shows up. And it's like, that's him. You know, like, what? Right? Like, I got to imagine, like, in those situations, it's like how poorly this kid was treated and God noticed and recognized something, right? And it required a prophet that was listening and hearing and saying, I don't have the answer to this, but God does. And it can't be a decision that comes from me. And you see Samuel struggle with that and wrestle with that. He's like, well, it's got to be this person, right? Or it's got to be this person. It's got to be this situation. As being one of the leaders of this community, it's all too often for me to kind of look at a situation that someone shares with me and go, it's got to be this way or it should be like that, right? Versus just like, okay, God, what are you doing that I'm going to end up getting in your way and saying something about that I shouldn't, you know? And it can often really sort of turn things around. In John chapter 1, verse 57. That's not right. Yeah, John chapter 1, starting in verse 43. So verse 50. I don't know why I wrote that. My notes are a mess. What up? Yeah. chapter 1, verse 43 through 50. It says, the next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Mine has an I. Bethesda doesn't have an I. Yeah, this one does. Keep it moving. My bad. Philip found Nathaniel. All right, sorry. Philip found Nathaniel and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth, can anything good come from here?" Nathaniel asked. "Come see," said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathaniel approaching, he said of him, "Here truly is an Israelite whom there is no deceit. How stupid must you feel when you were talking trash about the speaker, and you walk in through the door and the person pays you high honor. And you're like, oh, I didn't say that before, though. That wasn't me. That was Philip." I don't talk to Philip anymore. Thanks, Philip. Thanks, Obama. When Jesus saw Nathanael, he said, "Truly, here is an Israelite with where there is no deceit. How do you know me?" asked Nathanael. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." Then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of the Israelite." Jesus said, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You will see greater things than this," right? So here's an example of Jesus seeing as God sees, right? Jesus being able to see Nathanael and acknowledge and recognize something that is true of him that allowed Nathanael to recognize God for who he is and start that relationship, right? I mean, that's literally a salvation playing out in that situation. As I saw this, I recognize this in you, and then that gets brought forth. A couple years back, we started getting a bunch of prophetic words about this old church that was in this area. It was the Tab, and just kind of our collaboration with them and all this stuff, and I was kind of meeting with their pastors and kind of hanging out with some of those guys. And one day they had given us the blueprint to this property they had. And they said, "Hey, we really want to partner with you guys. We want to give you guys this property and maybe you guys can steward it." And it was like 7 or 8 acres of land. And I remember pulling Chris and a couple of the elders at the time. And I'm like, a bunch of property just kind of fell on our lap. What do we do? And I remember we all sat around, discussed it, you know, what would our church do, what can we do with this? Like, that's this thing that's, I mean, most people would be excited, right? Like, you know, I think we were wise enough to recognize, like, what's the catch? And I remember they gave us the blueprints, we looked through it, we walked the property a couple times, and there was something in me that was like, man, this would be so awesome, right? And it was really that part of me that was, it was just nice to be recognized as being significant enough to be entrusted with something like this. A validation that our community could accomplish something that could be huge, right? So the wheels start turning, right? Oh man, this is it. This is Samuel showing up at my house, and my humpback is now like the thing that gets me acknowledged, and now we've got like property. Tight. I'm totally down for this. So one day I'm in Salt Lake City, and they had this prophetic person there, and she's prophesying over all these people, and I think we were one of the last people she prophesied over. And so she calls up to the front, and she's kind of on the mic, and the first thing she says, she's like, "Do you have blueprints for something at your house?" And I'm like, don't take it away. Please, I need my shot. This is my 8 mile. This is like it's my moment, my one shot, mom's spaghetti. So... So I remember, and she was just like, "Is it a community? Is it someone in your local community, a church? You know, I feel like God's saying there's like a church, something that's been entrusted to you, and you've been kind of waiting for a long time for like God to like do something." I'm like, "Yeah, right? Like that's what I'm saying, you know." And she says, "I know it feels like a good fit, and I know it feels like," and I'm like, "Oh God, you know, like you know." And she's like, "But I feel like what God's saying is if you're willing to let this go, He'll give you something else. Something that'll fit right for you and that you don't have to mold yourself to." And I remember like, all right, man, you know, and I dreaded the conversation. I dreaded the like handing back the blueprints because I'm like, what are they going to say? Like, what are they going to like? Are you serious right now, dude? Like, we selected you guys and this is what you're going to do. And I just remember I'm like, making that choice and that decision. But it was someone seeing as God seeing the situation. It was someone acknowledging and recognizing something beyond what I would have seen. Because to me, it would have been like another challenge, another exciting journey, another thing to do. And it was the opportunity to have someone share with me and say, hey, that's not it. This is it. It's, again, the powerful part about the gift of discernment, to be able to acknowledge that. Because some of you guys are getting opportunities and you just assume that they're for you because it strokes your ego and it feels good, right? But the reality is the world is full of opportunities. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the one that we take. And it's critical that we are able to divide and make those decisions, because everything we decide in life is about sacrifice. Everything we do in life is about sacrifice. Either it's us refraining from sacrifice and then it happens on, you know, from lack of response, or sacrifice that we choose and build towards. And that we can say, hey, I'd love to do this, but I'm gonna do that, right? Because we can end up, I think, for so much of our lives in a bunch of busy work that had nothing to do with us and feel the insignificance of, like, a lack of accomplishment or getting anywhere. But when you know you're doing something God asks you to do, or if you know you're doing something that you're supposed to do, it's a completely different feeling. You have an assurance, and then you can experience the supernatural in those assurances because you feel that partnership versus, like, trudging along trying to get something moving and going that really wasn't for you in the first place. And I think in our generation, whatever it is, we are seeking affirmation. We're seeking acknowledgement. I can't tell you how many conferences I've been to where you can see it on people's faces. Like, will they pick me? Would I get prophesied over? Like, we want that significance. We seek it in relationship. We seek it in all these other environments because we don't have the confidence or the discernment of acknowledging what is ours and what isn't. So we touch things that weren't meant for us, right? And then we end up feeling burnt out and, like, worn down from, like, those experiences. Critical. Which leads to part three, protect from deception. I think it's all too easy for us to be deceived by situations and circumstances, like I mentioned previously, and not have the discernment to acknowledge and divide things. And again, speaking to kind of the comment I made about the previous one, to enable us to see how God sees, I think we have to be aware. It was the challenge that God gave to Cain. Right? What I love about the story of Abel, Cain and Abel, is that Cain had a choice the entire time, right? It wasn't like Cain could say, I got mad and I hit my brother and he died, right? Like, God confronted him and said, I know what's happening in your heart. I can see it. Let me tell you what's going on. You have a choice in this decision, right? He says, he describes, you know, that if I recall correctly, it was like that his envy, that like his pride was like a lion ready to pounce on him. It was a recognition that we have an enemy that is trying to deceive us, that is trying to divide us. And some of those attacks can be overt, right? In a panic attack, an anxiety attack. But some of it could be in sort of like speaks to our own wounds and insecurities in the way we elevate ourselves. I see so often, and it's too easy, I see so often how we divide ourselves out of the hope of elevating ourselves because we want to be different from the people around us. Well, I have this gift. Well, I do this thing, right? And we're like, it's God because he's acknowledging and recognizing, you know, me. And it's like, no, it's your pride, right? It's the trap that's going to come. I remember hearing a quote a long time ago that said, you have to discipline yourself because the world's going to give you the opportunity for you to destroy yourself. And if you don't know how to make the right decisions, it will be your fault. It will be your own choice. You won't be able to say it with someone else. It's like, so all those opportunities, all those things that feel good, that could be deception, it could just be the carrot that leads us on the journey, ultimately leads us to destruction. And then again, we feel, you know, we'll end up feeling divided. We end up feeling apart. We end up feeling separated. I mean, it's all too easy. I mean, even in our own community, it's like you can tell when people begin to struggle and start believing a lie because they become less and less involved, right? They become less and less connected. And that's not just a church issue. You see in relationships, you see it in workplaces, all of those things. It's like you can tell when someone, you know, and I'm not advocating for the idea of like a person has to be at church every Saturday or they're not holy. But you can tell when someone's beginning to become disengaged. And it starts with the narrative that they choose to believe and think. And that narrative leads down a different path. And relationships can be that way. I'll never do that. I'll never say that. I'll never. And then it's like that slow journey and that slow path. So you feel justified in your actions at the end. But that's the critical part of being able to recognize, like, the spirit of discernment. It's here to bring unity, to bring connection, and to have the discernment to not only acknowledge circumstances around us, but look at ourselves and go, what's happening in my heart? Where am I buying into something? Like, can I look at the mirror and have enough discernment to recognize something's not right? And the issue's not just this, it's me. It's me, right? Like, it's, you know, as I previously mentioned, like, it's too easy to go, it's the demonic, it's the enemy. And then you have a friend on the outside, have a good friend that can call you out. That's just like, I mean, you just have a history of blaming everybody else, but you keep creating the same circumstance. Maybe it's you. You know, like, maybe it's you, like, going along with it, right? And it's recognizing that we easily can be deceived, and the greatest deception can be our own significance. It could be our own, like, it doesn't have to be the enemy going, like, something overt, right? Like, it's all too easy for me to see the bad thing. It's like, hey, kids, you want candy? No, right? And it's like, hey, Birdo, you want significance? You want to fight? And it's like, yeah. Like, I'd love to get into an altercation. I'm going on Facebook. You know what I mean? Like, it's all too easy for, like, to get there and to land there. And again, having the discernment to kind of recognize and acknowledge that about ourselves. And to me, if there's one thing you walk away, is being able to see in the mirror clearly and let the spirit of discernment kind of speak to you to what's going on, I think that'd be awesome. If you never see another angel, as much as I would love that, right? If you never see, you know, get a prophetic word for another person, but that ability to just be able to see yourself and what's going on, I think would save a lot of Christians a lot of heartache. And the last one, which I'll close with, to enable us to diagnose a situation and to help someone. This is where I think the biggest abuse of the spirit of discernment that I've seen. It's sort of, it becomes like the card to be a total jerk to someone and, like, be negative, right? Because I'm discerning something about you. You're a problem. Like, you're an issue, right? I've seen it. It's sort of like the Christian version of, with all due respect, right? And so I'm going to justify what I say next. You know, like, it becomes, Chris is in the back going, dang it. I know it hurts, Chris. It's fine. There's healing in the Lord. We're just going to have a prayer team go to the back, and sorry, I'm done. but I'm serious. It's our version of that. It's what gives us an aversion towards, like, discernment, because I think sometimes it's sort of like the usage of the prophetic, where the prophetic gets used not to lift up, exhort, or to edify. It gets used to bring a person down. That's not to say that there isn't, like, a criticism there. Like, there isn't, like, we shouldn't be open to someone saying something difficult. But I do recognize that that's where we get the aversion. That's where we kind of, like, we're afraid of what does that mean, where someone discerns something on someone. But I think it's all in how we carry that and we handle a situation like that. Because the reality is the Holy Spirit is all about making people and circumstances whole. All about that. He's all about making people and circumstances whole. That means that we get to play a role in that partnership in edifying and helping people, right? We mine for gold, not dirt. The whole point of discernment in the prophetic is not so you can talk trash about someone or air out their dirty laundry. It's so that you can extract gold. And if that's the focus of discerning a circumstance and a situation for someone, then you can actually aid in helping the circumstance than it is into telling them something they've already heard before. Your problem is you're a drug addict. Oh, wow. So glad you're here. Like, what would I have done without that word, right? Sometimes it is in the callings and purposes of people's lives and recognizing the circumstances that exist in that situation. I think it's why someone like Solomon, when he was asked by God, give me something, and the two things he asked for was discernment and wisdom. He's like, I want to know what's going on, and I want to be able to address it and know what to do, right? And suddenly his life is filled with these incredible deals and these incredible partnerships and successes that he had. And while God did say that he was going to honor him because he asked for a good thing, he was going to bless his work, at the same time, it's also a natural consequence of being a person with discernment and wisdom. Anytime, I don't care who it is, right? Anytime we have anyone running for office, whoever wins, that's generally my prayer for them. Let them be a person of discernment and wisdom, that they know what's going on and how to handle the situation in such a way where it brings unity in our country and things are able to work out. I don't care who it is. I don't want someone who's like a total peacemaker and lets things play out way longer than they should. And I don't want the guy or girl who's just going to be out there spitting out of his mouth. And it's like that. Neither is helping. Like, it's the person with discernment and wisdom that I think is going to be critical, which is also why I think I'm a little bit prone to not sort of like jump into, this is the person God has chosen, like not really hit that bandwagon so much, as much as my attitude is like, whoever it is, I'll know them. If that's someone God has picked, by the discernment and wisdom that they operate and walk in, right? Because a guy like David, despite his mistakes, was able to usher in the golden age of Israel. So you can't really question the work. Like, you can't really, like, I mean, he was successful, right? Then maybe he knows what he's doing, right? It's another thing to talk the talk and never see the success of a situation. You're like, well, maybe there's something to be said to that. But you look at a guy like Solomon, and the perfect example, again, using Bible verses we all know, is the story of the two women that he has to figure out, like, whose baby it is, right? That is a PR nightmare waiting to happen. I mean, imagine, right, where there's deep poverty. Things are bad, like really bad. So bad, the poor are making deals of whose kid gets eaten when, right? And I'm sure there was already a displacement of wealth, right? There was likely the Israelite nobility who had all the power and their families weren't starving. And then you've got all the poor people who are kind of dealing with the situation. And there's Solomon as a judge, so he plays both the judicial and the executive branch, right? And there's this high-profile court hearing, right? Almost like the O.J. Simpson trial. Cameras are rolling. People are on social media ready to, like, rip apart what he has to say. And this fool says, let's cut the baby in half. Like, right? Like, oh, like, what? No, right? Like, I can only imagine the Christians, we rebuke the president. Like, we rebuke this person, right? Like, as the reaction. I got to imagine, you know, others would have commented, you know, oh, there he goes, purposely making war against the poor and taking advantage of them because he's turning a blind eye, right? And then suddenly, like, the circumstance, you know, the woman's like, no, let her have him. And he's like, well, that's the mom. And everyone's like, what? Oh, my God, put it on Instagram. This is going. This is a historic day. He's the best president we've ever had. Like, he's the king of kings, right? It's suddenly the idea of discernment plays out in Marx, right? It totally marks his the role that he played in that country. What? What do you mean if it wasn't really the mom that got the baby? Well, I mean, I guess that's the point of the spirit of discernment. He got the right one. Yeah, right, right. And it's like, hey, your biological mom, but we're starting an adoption process. It's like, boop, like, oh my God, what? It's like I won a prize. Like, although you question, like, then why were you here if that wasn't your baby either? I don't know. But anyway, so we recognize, like, it's, what? Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm like, are you pointing? Is there a spirit? Sure. Yeah. That guy went downhill for a while. Those things are fine. Why are you judging him? I don't understand. I feel attacked. Yeah. 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 Yeah, I mean, there becomes a person who's, like, married to their own success. Like, they lose the whole point of, like, why they started what they started. And yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Yeah, it's like, it's, yeah. And the other part of it, too, is, like, it's the benefit we have in having the Holy Spirit is suddenly we get to have a plethora of giftings that allows us to sort of, like, balance some of that stuff out and that recognition. And I'm glad that it's divided among the church because I'm forced to work with people I don't like because they don't act and look like me, and that's my problem. I mean, really, it's a true statement. I mean, the idea behind the Holy Spirit and the spiritual gift is to encourage unity, but what we do is we come across people we don't like. And it's funny because when we like someone, our attitude, we don't even recognize we're just looking in the mirror and we like ourselves. It's like, wow, you are so, I like you, you are so smart. You are so funny and admirable, and it's like, like, right? Because we're hedonistic in that regard. So we choose and select the people we like. And then God, in his infinite wisdom, then gave gifts to the people we don't like. And it's like, oh, here comes the person who speaks in tongues. You know, like, it's like, I know you don't like that one, dude, but really? Like, are we going to do that right now? We get lost in that. And I think, really, as we're wrapping some of this up, I do want to emphasize that idea that these spiritual gifts are to create unity, despite that there are a diversity of gifts. It's not for the express purpose of, and I had a great conversation with Travis a couple weeks back, right? The spiritual gifts aren't for like, hey, look how cool you guys are. It's like, hey, here's another reason to divide yourselves. Go find other people who have the gifts that you like. Or better yet, go find people who don't have the gift you have so you feel significant, right? Like, that's not the point. The point is to promote and encourage unity, right? It's funny because I was kind of reading a little bit about this. So the word accuser in Greek is the word kategoros. It's where we get the word category, right? So in these type of environments, it's the perfect breeding ground for the enemy to divide up people in categories. And we are the type of people who will totally do it and go, run with it, right? I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. You know, I'm a libertarian. What was that? Machine Gun Kelly, Eminem, which one? Eminem, right? Like, what? Like, which one? I mean, really, we're looking, have you noticed it panders to so many of us? It's like, the Pokemon game launched. What tribe do you want to be in? It's like, really? Does that even do anything? Like, but then suddenly, like, you ever notice, like, people just take that stuff seriously? It's like, oh, I'm Team Mystic, I'm part of this. Or we do that with football games, right? We see a team, and we yell at the TV like we even know what we're talking about, right? Like, as if it represents us. Like, this person has become an avatar. Their success is my success, right? I have found myself, and as stupid as it is, because I don't even like football, I will literally worry that I'm going to have a crappy year if the Patriots lose. Because I'm just like, I mean, because I'm like, but, like, association, because even though Tom Brady ain't from Massachusetts, it's like he's there and he's doing this for me. It's like, because they always like, it's obviously God. Like, so I mean, it's easy for us to quickly be divided, but we forget, like, that's the whole plan of the enemy. His whole plan is to put us in categories and allow us to identify ourselves. And like, nothing is like enough for us, whether we're dealing with inequality, right, in workplace between men and women, or even gender politics in our culture. It's like we have to divide things into further and find our own little camps than to recognize what God's doing. But ironically enough, while the gift of discernment can all too easily be used to divide people, its express purpose isn't for division, but to bring healing to a situation or circumstance. And part of that is a whole social justice idea behind it, or justice. I don't want to say social justice because that comes with its own thing. But I'm serious. Like, look back to the case of Solomon, right? He's providing justice and dividing and discerning a situation, right? Not for the sake of creating division in his community, but for the sake of responding to something. To me, like, that's the beauty of people who have discernment. They can look at a sticky situation and be able to discern correctly and not end up in camps. And to have that courage, like, and, you know, as a team, we were talking about, you know, are we a community that believes in justice, right? And we recognize that we had this apprehension for what that suddenly meant. Like, you had to pick a side for everything you believed in, right? You had to pick on whether you're, like, you're with this, you know, you're with the cops or you're with this community or with that. And it's like we get lost in the idea of, like, no, man, there's a sermon to be had in this situation that could actually bring a holistic approach to this to change people's lives. But we're a people without discernment. So we play the politics. I mean, it kills me every time I see a Christian, and I know that I'm prone to doing it myself, like fighting the political gambit sometimes, as if things are really that simple. And it's like, that won't do it. That's not gonna do it, right? Like, even some of the issues we're having with our government shutdown, right? It's like, one answer or the other isn't going to do it. And if a people of discernment could rise up, we could find, like, something that is across boundaries. And we're literally seeing the manifestation in our culture where an entire government gets shut down because there's a people with little discernment. There's a people who don't know how to work those situations. So please, for the sake of our government, spirit of discernment, like, run for office. So I recognize that. But, I mean, I did want to mention that last thing. It is about people. It is about circumstances. It's about helping other people. It's about engaging in culture and community. So we're going to end tonight, and I'm just going to pray for you guys. But I would encourage for you guys to exercise this opportunity of being sensitive to what God's doing, to not be so quick to respond or have an answer, but just be sensitive to circumstances, to look in the mirror and look at your own selves, to be open to the angelic, to be open to what's happening in the supernatural, and recognize that there are things that are happening beyond ourselves that we can influence to see a community transformed and people changed. So where are we going out to eat tonight?